Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I am not joined by Pete. I am not riding solo. I have a way better guest lined up here, and we've been trying to do this for what, George, like three weeks now?
Yeah, ever since I was at Summer League, Anthony, but I'm glad we're able to make it work today.
That's George Sedano of The Jump. By the time you guys are listening to this, he'll be on The Jump tomorrow at noon, and then he does the ESPN LA radio show 6 to 10 a.m. every single day. He does great work. I'm really grateful that you're hopping on the show to talk about LeBron.
Yeah, man, happy to do it. I like to tell people I've won the LeBron lottery twice in my life now, so that's kind of where we're at.
We're going to talk. That's basically what we're going to spend the most of our time here with. Basically, what Laker fans have to get ready for in having a LeBron James team that they're going to be rooting for, and then talking about him playing the five and the way that the three different fan bases now are all kind of looking at it, slightly different for each one. I wanted to kind of to poke George's brain here to see what he thinks about that kind of dynamic. You guys know where to find the show. You guys know where to find me. Let's dive right into this. You were there in Miami before or when he came in, right? You were there in Miami. He makes the decision to go down there and take his talents to South Beach. What was the biggest thing that changed for the city when LeBron showed up?
Well, look, that city was a football town when I was growing up. And then, you know, Pat Riley came when I was a kid. I was like 16 or 17 years old. And he kind of changed the landscape a little bit, right? They had some really good teams there with Alonzo Mourning and Tim Hardaway and Jamal Mashburn. They couldn't get over the hump. The Knicks kind of were in their way. The Bulls were in their way. They lost, you know, a bunch of times in deep in the playoffs. Then Shaq came from the Lakers, ironically, and he joins forces with Dwayne Wade. They end up winning a championship 2 years into it. I mean, they could have potentially won two had Dwayne Wade not gotten hurt the first year that Shaq was there in the Eastern Conference Finals. So there was a sense of, okay, Heat basketball had arrived. But what happened there was it kind of took things to a different stratosphere. And the coverage of it changed, of the NBA in that city. And it was because of LeBron, right? Like, and you had this sense of, okay, you may have the greatest player in the history of the game playing for your organization, and you've got him in the midst of his prime at 25 years old. Oh, yeah, he also happens to be playing with arguably his best friend, Dwayne Wade, who's the guy you drafted, the native son who made all this happen. And, oh, by the way, they got another top 15 player in Chris Bosh. So it clearly was a big deal. And the way it was covered, it felt like a big deal. It was that way locally. It was that way nationally. I have never been a part of, and still to this day have not been a part of, even after that. And I've covered a lot of NBA games and a lot of NBA teams over the years, where every game that first year LeBron arrived felt like a game seven.
Yeah.
And you literally went into opposing arenas, and it was game seven of the NBA Finals for that team. That's exactly how it felt. I've told this story before. I don't know if I've told you that story, but the first game they played was against the Boston Celtics. And that was the KG, Ray Allen, Pierce, Rondo Celtics. And Shaq was on that team actually that year too. And I remember walking into the Celtics locker room, and KG, who's super amped up for games, was walking around. And now, before I do this, can you bleep me out when I curse?
I can try. I no, usually don't bleep out.
It's fine. Don't worry about it. Then everyone will know what I mean.
Yeah.
So KG's walking around the locker room, banging his hand against his head. Oh, and he's saying, F the Heat, F the Heat, F the Heat, F the Heat. And he's walking back and forth, pacing in the locker room. And I'm going, and I'm looking around, and I look at somebody, I don't remember who was next to me, and I go, yo, this is game one of the regular season. Like, what are the NBA Finals going to look like?
If we have 100 more of these to come.
Right. So that just goes to show you. Now, I don't know, and I don't believe the intensity and the hatred for this Laker team will reach those levels, because I don't think people have the same expectations right now of this particular Laker team right now. Now, if Kawhi would have been there and Paul George, then maybe it would have been as close to that as I've seen. But it's like the Warriors, right? They get it, but they never got it. They've never gotten as bad as Wade, LeBron, and Bosch got it, because they were kind of the first to do it that way, where they chose to play together and everyone had an opinion about it and all the old heads hated it and all that stuff. And look, that's kind of followed LeBron in a lot of ways. There's a lot of old heads who hate this move to the Lakers. You know, the common phrase is, well, he's not really thinking about basketball. So much so that his agent, Rich Paul, and longtime, you know,
friend clarify, and associate,
had to clarify that, right? Which, of course, is kind of silly. Now, look, you can make the case. And look, I don't know LeBron, like, personally, but I know him well enough because I've covered him for all these years and I've been around him every day for a stretch of my life, that he's as competitive as they come. Like, and yes, he's measured. So maybe he has the expectation of, okay, maybe we won't win the championship this year. But he has the belief that he's coming to Los Angeles to win championships. Like, don't get that twisted. But I guess what I would say to Laker fans is this is going to be as fun and interesting a ride. And I guess fun is also relative because there's going to be some bumps in the road.
Yep.
And, you know, I think that's fun because I root for storylines. And LeBron's certainly always going to be able to provide those on top of the cast of characters that they added, which we can get to in a second. But I think that that's what you're going to be in for. You're going to be in your rightful place if you're the Lakers and the Laker fans, which is, even though the Warriors are the champions, but they are kind of old news in a way. Now, the Boogie Cousins thing certainly changes that. They're not the typical old news because they're not bringing back the exact same team, and they're bringing in this superstar who's coming in for the mid-level, and he's injured. But the reality is that the Lakers are going to be back to being the crown jewel of the NBA. They're going to be the team that people most focus on because they're the most popular team in the sport. They're the most polarizing team in the sport historically. And you're going to be back on that mantle in that place. And people are going to have opinions. Sometimes you're going to agree with them. Sometimes you're going to hate them. But just enjoy the ride is what I would say to Laker fans, because look at what's happened the last 5 years. It hasn't been as fun, clearly. Mm-hmm. And we can, I know that you could throw the caveat of Kobe's final year in there, but it's not as fun. When you're the team that is polarizing in the league, it's fun. When Shaq was playing with Kobe, that was fun. When Karl Malone and Gary Payton joined them, that was fun, even though it didn't result in a championship. All that stuff is fun. And I think that's what I would say to Laker fans is, you know, every game's going to mean something. And in essence, it's really not going to mean anything, because at the end of the day, one out of 82 isn't that big a deal, but it's going to feel like a big deal.
It's I was hoping that you weren't going to mention the Dwight Howard year, that this is going to be fun.
No, because that wasn't really fun.
Not actually fun.
Yeah. And by the way, no one was more upset that that wasn't fun than me, because I had to cover a bunch of finals in Oklahoma City, in San Antonio, and Dallas, when I wanted to clearly go to LA to cover a finals.
We were all pretty bummed about that. We're going to take a quick second here. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about the additions that you alluded to and what to expect there. And then finally get to the conversation about LeBron at the five, because I think that goes a long way in deciding what the Lakers may or may not be capable of. So we'll do that all here in a second. So the Lakers add LeBron James, and obviously everybody's all thrilled about that. And you're thinking, okay, well, now all they got to do is surround him with veterans and with role players who you feel confident that if they aren't going to be able to add to whatever's going on with the Lakers, they aren't going to take away from it. There's no risk of them taking away from what the Lakers are capable of. That isn't necessarily the case with like Lance Stephenson or with Michael Beasley. So as those pieces were being added to the Lakers roster, how were you feeling about that? How were you receiving those updates?
Okay, now I don't love the veteran additions. I kind of like the Lance one, but here's why: because I do think Lance brings that toughness that they want. And you need a little – I'm cool with a little crazy. Like I am. I'm good with that. Mm-hmm. And I think every fun roster has that. And every championship roster probably has that. I mean, you guys had Meta World Peace, right?
Yep.
So there's that. When I was in Miami with LeBron, they had Birdman, you know, like mm-hmm. they had guys, either they were a little crazy like Birdman or tough guys like Udonis Haslam, yep. right? Like every team has those kind of enforcer, wacky kind of characters. So the Lance part of it, I'm good with. Here's the only part about the Lance thing I'm not good with is the salary. My understanding is there wasn't anyone else out there willing to give Lance more than the minimum. So I know it's only a one-year deal, but I wasn't keen on that. And I get that the notion behind that is, well, if this doesn't work, his salary can be lumped into a trade and it makes it easier. I get all that. I just don't think you could have gotten better value there, right? And yep. that may be nitpicking, and that's fine. But look, LeBron wanted high IQ players. I know people may think I'm crazy when I say this, but Lance is actually a really smart basketball player. Now, the antics may not be stuff that you like, but that doesn't mean he's not smart at playing basketball. He knows what he's doing when he does the stuff he does. I actually think, if anything, it's kind of ingenious of him to behave the way he behaves. The Rondo one, I get from the IQ standpoint. Dwayne Wade once told me that outside of LeBron, the smartest basketball player he ever played with was Rajon Rondo.
It's crazy how many people echo that sentiment, because Wade is nowhere near the only person who has said that.
Yeah, so that part of it I love, and he fits the mold of high IQ, much like Lance, right? Even way more so than Lance.
Mm-hmm.
So I like that part of it. I don't love the fact that he can't shoot. I don't love the fact that he has at times been a problem in the locker room, particularly with coaches. And I worry for Luke, who's only in his third season with a guy like Rondo in there. And I've seen Rondo say the right things before and then it not work out. Ask Rick Carlisle about that. Yep. Right. Now, he was a good citizen in New Orleans. The young guys in Chicago loved him, but there was clearly an issue between him and Hoiberg and Dwayne Wade and Jimmy Butler.
Yep.
So he's not shy about that stuff. So that worries me a little bit. But the shooting, or the lack thereof, worries me. And what does that mean for Lonzo Ball? Like, that to me is the bigger issue. Because if you want to push Lonzo, I get it. But I don't want to push Lonzo at the expense of him not playing and learning more. Because that's what this season should be about for those guys. Are these guys ready to take the next step? Are they good complements to LeBron? That's the type of stuff you need to find out. And you're not going to be able to do that if you're playing guys like Rondo too many minutes, or if you're playing Lance too many minutes, or Beasley, who I'll get to now. Michael is as talented a player as there is offensively. 3-point shooting, his percentage has been better the last couple of years. He's not a good volume 3-point shooter, which is why he doesn't take very many of them.
Mm-hmm.
But he's unbelievably skilled on the offensive end. His problem is this: he's a terrible defender, and it's not even a will thing. Like, it's not that he just doesn't get defensive concepts.
Yeah, he defends
well.
Like a Roomba.
Right. He doesn't defend very well because I just don't think he's in that high IQ category. He doesn't fit that. But now LeBron has played with him, ever be it so briefly, the last year he was in Miami. And LeBron has always been about, get me as much talent as possible. That was always kind of his mantra there. Clearly his mantra in Cleveland, you know, the story goes with Iman Shumpert, that David Griffin said, we're going to get Iman Shumpert, but we're going to have to take JR. And his thing, and LeBron's thing in response to him was, yeah, give me JR. I'm fine with Iman. Just let me have JR.
Yep.
So LeBron is willing to take on those guys, but at what expense, right? Does that mean Kyle Kuzma's minutes are going to be reduced? Does that mean Brandon Ingram's minutes are reduced? Who's getting less minutes? And I've been told, Ramona Shelburne was on the radio show the other day, and she says that she's been told it's situational. I don't love hearing that.
Yeah, that's not great.
Yeah, especially in the regular season, I don't love hearing that. So I could see, come the postseason, you want to win a series, all bets are off. Like, I'm good with that. But in the regular season, I need to see those young guys get opportunities to play with LeBron and see what you've got there.
Yeah, I wrote for Silver Screen. I just finished it. It'll go up by the time this thing is posted. But basically, coaches, when expectations are on the line, they rely on predictability, not potential, and that's the concern. I was hoping to hear at some point the Lakers step up and say, "No, we are for sure playing these young kids. They're going to get their opportunities." But if it's situational, that tells me, yeah, some of these kids could get frozen out.
Right, for sure, and I don't love that part of it. So. And with JaVale, I actually like JaVale,
yeah,
the signing, because he's a vertical spacer, you know, sets the screen, much like Chris Anderson did for LeBron, to a lesser extent what Tristan Thompson did for LeBron. But really the comp is Birdman. Like what LeBron was able to do with Birdman in Miami, and for, I guess he played in Cleveland for a second, but really what he was able to do with him in 2 years in Miami, that to me is what JaVale can be on the high end. The question is, look, JaVale also not a high IQ player, right? Like you worry about that stuff. But if you're limiting his role to 10 to 15 minutes, maybe 20 if there's an injury, then I'm okay with that. I just don't think he can be playing more minutes. He should be playing more minutes than that.
Yeah.
So I, there are things I like about each signing overall. I don't know if I love any of them. I guess out of all of them, the one I like the most is Lance. But yeah, like I don't necessarily love all of them because I do think that it will hurt potentially the growth of those young guys. Now I'm going to take you back to the first year in Miami when Eric Spoelstra had a similar situation where the Heat had a bunch of, they had a couple of young guys like Mario Chalmers or whatever. And like Joel Anthony was a guy that they had just kind of cultivated. He was a young guy at the time. And he was more of a, not like JaVale, but more like that. Set yep. great screens, you know what I mean? Like could block shots and things like that. He wasn't a great finisher per se, but he was really good defensively. Great defending the pick and roll, set great screens, that kind of stuff. Like a super duper duper poor man's version of like Clint Capella. You know, but a role player version, like super duper poor man yeah. role player version of that.
Kind of guy who's just not going to mess things up.
No, for sure. Right. You just, and you know what he is. You may be 4-on-5 on offense in some ways, but defensively he can make up for that. So I think that when you look at what they've got here, man, like Eric was playing guys like Zydrunas Ilgauskas that first year when he was clearly done. You know, Eric Dampier, I think, was on the team, if I recall correctly. You know, like all these like deadbeat type veteran guys. And I remember they signed Mike Bibby at the on the buyout market, and they were playing Bibby. They were starting Bibby over Chalmers, who was clearly the better player at that stage. And yeah, like those are things that I don't want Luke to fall into those traps. Interestingly enough, we know that Luke has spoken to Ty Lue and Eric Spoelstra about managing LeBron and managing expectations and kind of these kind of rosters. Both guys, I would imagine, gave him a laundry list of things to have to kind of be mindful of, because both guys were young coaches when they coached LeBron. Eric was in the exact same spot that Luke was in. He was going into his third season when LeBron arrived. Eric at least had the experience of coaching in the playoffs a couple of times because of Dwayne being on the roster, which Luke doesn't have, at least as a head coach.
And Spoelstra was also Riley's guy.
Correct.
Luke isn't correct. Necessarily Magic's guy.
He's Genie's guy.
Yeah.
And that's something that you worry about a little bit, right? So all those things are things that I am in 100% agreement with you. I don't want it to come at the expense of those young guys, particularly in the regular season.
All right, we're going to take a quick second here. When we come back, we'll talk about the LeBron himself and the role that he might be playing. We'll get to all that after we pay a couple bills here. So it's been funny to watch the response from Heat Twitter, from Cavaliers Twitter, from just NBA Twitter in general. People who are saying, you know, when I say, look, this team, this rotation is built upon, it looks like, or it's predicated on LeBron playing the five, and everybody's just like, all right, well good luck with that. And the thing that I kind of fall back on in my optimism here is LeBron had that reported 3-hour conversation with Magic, where they talked about where his career is currently, where it's coming from, where it's going, and trying to figure out what best roles, as he evolves as a player, how that role is going to evolve with him. And I'm thinking maybe, and then there was, before he was even a Laker, there were the reports that he wanted to move more off of the ball, that he felt pretty taxed by the end of his time there in Cleveland. And so maybe I'm thinking, okay, he's more open to the idea than he was in years past. One, would you roll with that theory? And two, if you are going to roll with that, is it just a Magic Johnson thing, or is it really him looking at the landscape and saying, "All right, this is where I'm heading"?
If it's going to happen, it's because Magic is going to twist his arm enough to make it happen.
Yeah.
And here's the thing: I think Magic is the entire reason, from a basketball perspective, that LeBron is a Laker.
Yep.
And the reason I think that is on these fronts. In Cleveland, both times, LeBron got to kind of rule the roost, right? And he kind of was allowed to do whatever the hell he wanted. In Miami, it was Pat Riley's way or the highway.
Yep.
Now, that's like military school, okay? Whereas Magic offers some of the same structures that Pat Riley does, except he's more lenient, right? In this sense, he's not going to be the dictator like Pat is. Yeah. So I think LeBron has always appreciated the structure he got in Miami, so much so that, you know, I think he was, I'm pretty sure Sports Illustrated was the one who wrote this, how he tried to bring that culture to Cleveland.
I remember that.
And you remember the signings of James Jones and Mike Miller and those kind, Birdman, those kind of guys, because he wanted that culture around there. It never really worked out that way, but he was trying. Now, I think with Magic, he's got some of that. So there's some familiarity there.
Yeah, Magic, who also learned from Riley, by the way.
Correct, right. So like he's been through that. That's why, you know, LeBron sees familiarity in the structure of the way they want to do business, right? Mm-hmm. I think that there's that. I think that more important than anything else is, on top of the structure, Magic Johnson is one of the few people in the universe that can empathize with LeBron and understand what it's like to be the greatest player on the planet, right? There's just not a lot of guys that can empathize with him that way. And Magic's personality is that he loves to share and impart wisdom and be empathetic. And he's so good at relating to players that I think that is appealing to LeBron, right? So it's, okay, I can get the same kind of structure I had with the Heat, except I actually feel like I've got an ally as opposed to I work for Pat Riley. So there's that part of it. And beyond that, there's the stuff that everyone's talking about, the business stuff. Look, man, few people are as successful as Magic Johnson from a business perspective. And I do think the civic duties of Magic Johnson is something that's appealing to LeBron.
Yep.
So I think all those things help in making LeBron understand the plan, right? Whatever the plan is. Now, with that said, the reason I use the phrase twist his arm is because LeBron was super reluctant to play power forward.
Yeah, even the four.
Okay? Super reluctant, okay? Eric Spoelstra wanted to do that from day one, and LeBron was like, nah, not happening. And he basically had to get shamed into it after they lost in the NBA Finals to the Dallas Mavericks, where LeBron had his worst finals, maybe the worst playoff series he's ever had, right? Yep. He averaged 17 points a game, 10 points below his average. He couldn't post up JJ freaking Barea, who's my height, okay? Yeah. That's the ongoing joke for anyone who was a in fan Miami. Of the Heat at that time. Yeah. Is like, you couldn't post up JJ Barea. Like, seriously?
I think Poppy Levitard lost like a few years of his life because of that.
Still talks about it to this day. He got shamed into it. And when that happened, like, Eric was like, dude, if we put you here, we're going to be indestructible. No one's going to be able to stop us. And he just like relented and was like, fine, let's do it. And I remember the first game they played, that was the strike shortened season. It was Christmas Day. They played in Dallas and he played the four and nobody could guard him.
Yeah.
And
world beating.
And he created so many opportunities for all the other players. It was so the game was so easy for them that year because of LeBron playing the four. And he was, I thought, the most destructive force in the league at that point. And if you look at his efficiency numbers, I believe they're still the highest that he's ever had as far as his efficiency rate is concerned.
Yep.
So he did it. When he went back to Cleveland, he didn't really love to do that. He went back to the three. If you look at that first year in Cleveland, his numbers were, by his standards, poor, particularly from an efficiency standpoint. And I believe he shot, I don't know if it was a career low, but as low as he shot in a long, long time that first year in Cleveland. Slowly but surely, he started to do it more with Ty Lue. Interestingly enough, Ty tells the story that Eric and him had a conversation, and Eric also kind of helped him massage how to do this with LeBron, right? And Ty also had at least an advantage that Eric didn't. Eric was a college basketball player, son of a guy who was a GM for years and whatnot. You know, Ty played in the NBA, so I think there was at least a little more relatability with LeBron in that sense. So Ty was able to get him to do it in stretches, for moments, not for long stretches like they were able to do with the Heat. So my point to you is this. Could the Lakers get him to do it? Perhaps. Will they be able to do it every night? I doubt it. Will they be able to get him to do it situationally? I believe so, but it's going to be on Magic and Luke to really be in unison, lock in step here on how this is going to be a huge advantage for them. And look, LeBron's not dumb. He gets it. What he doesn't love is taking the pounding, right?
Yeah.
And if you're playing power forward or center, you're going to take a pounding. Even in today's small ball, you're still going to get beat up more than you would playing on the wing. And that bothers him. So I think he'll be willing to do it in stretches, but it's going to be on those guys really kind of emphasizing how important it is for them to do it, for him to really come to grips with it being part of his new reality. They did it occasionally, actually, in Miami, too. There were nights where Bosch was either hurt or injured or you know, just out for whatever reason. And LeBron had some stretches where he would play the five. It didn't happen all that often in Miami. As a matter of fact, I remember specifically one time it happened against the Lakers, and he was guarding Pau Gasol, and vice versa.
Yeah, I remember. I remember that the announcers were like going through the guys that are on the court for Miami, and they're like, "Wait, the biggest guy on the court is LeBron is playing the five," and lo and behold, he ripped Pau to shreds. So that was fun.
Yeah, yeah. They did it in a few instances where the Chris was hurt, injured, or you know, foul trouble, whatever. But yeah, that was one instance. So, crazy enough, it happened against the Lakers one of those times. But yeah, like I just think it's so important with LeBron that you have to really drive home the point. And you have to be, if you're the Lakers, like completely lock in step with this. Like he can't see any sign of doubt or weakness. Like everybody's got to be on the other same way. Page.
Yeah.
Right. Because if not, he's going to question it and he's going to naturally want to gravitate the other way because he needs to be sold on things. And that's just his nature. He's always been that way. Even when he was younger, he was that way. He's gotten more like that as he's gotten older. But he's not dumb. Like he sees that if Draymond is at the five, they're best suited with him playing at the 5-2. Like, I think that it'll just have to be sold to him the right way, and I think he'll do it in certain instances.
It's kind of funny the way that the roster has come together, that it's kind of Magic's way of saying, well, look, I mean, we don't have any other options at the 5. You really think we can roll with Zubats here or rookie and Mo Wagner? We have no choice. if that was their thinking there, Magic's playing chess while everybody else is playing checkers.
Yeah, and I'm curious to see how quickly they would unveil that. Would that be something that you see sporadically through the regular season? Is it something you'll simply just see in the postseason? I'm curious. I don't know. you know, maybe it's game one, you know, when they play at Golden State. Now, I don't know that to be 100% sure that that's the case, but I would be stunned if the Lakers aren't playing in the home opener of the season against Golden State. Like, I would be completely stunned if that weren't the case and they weren't in Oakland for game one.
I think it's – I could see it either being Golden State or Oklahoma City with the – like, Oklahoma City at L.A. where the Laker fans get to razz Paul George. Like, that's where I could see that going if it is
Golden State. Yeah, I think that I would – if I were to guess, I think the Lakers home opener will probably be OKC. But yeah. I think the season opener, there's a decent chance that it could be – again, purely speculation on my part. I just know if I were pulling the puppet strings, what I would do is I would have LeBron and the Lakers in Oakland for game one.
And that's kind of the low-key, like, cool thing about this kind of rivalry that they have going on here is that – or that they could build is that they're going to play four times a year. So you can space those games out all over the place. It's it's kind of fun. All right. Well, hey, thank you very much for hopping on with us today. And I'm glad we were finally able to make this work. Congratulations on all the successes moving forward. As I told everybody at the beginning of the show, catch George on the Jump noon tomorrow and then every week morning, 6 to 10 in the morning. Thanks again, man. I really appreciate you hopping on and enjoy your summer as we get into it.
Yeah, man, no worries. And by the way, the Jump is on Friday. So if you're listening on Friday, it's actually on Friday.
Yeah.
If you're listening on Friday tomorrow, there's no Saturday Jump. Rachel doesn't work on Saturdays. So there you go. Neither do I, for that matter. But yeah, thank you, brother. Always happy to do it. And let's do it again soon.
All right. Have a great day, everybody. Have a great weekend. I'll talk to you guys on Monday.